Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show today. You're going to be glad you did because we have an extraordinary group of guests. There are listeners. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way to ensure that 2015 is your best year yet? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms, and I'd like to personally invite you to attend Creating Your Future, the 2015 Goals Retreat, January 9th to 11th in beautiful San Diego, California. This unique weekend event has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the hundreds of people that have attended. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com and click on events or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track, physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2015 Goals Retreat on the second weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18, today. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Joining us in the studio this week, it's our co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
And the man we call the godfather of real estate because he's been investing in seven different decades, Bob Helms.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's always good to talk real estate with our listeners. And anytime you feel like it, you're welcome to go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys and send us your questions. We get these all the time. Wish we could answer them more often, but we have culled through the list. And there are some really, really great questions today. So here are the only disclaimers. We are not attorneys, CPAs. We don't give advice. We give ideas and information. And if you like the ideas and information you hear, then your mission is to go and further research that and look for professionals that can help you. Let's get started. This first question comes from Kaylen in Lawrenceville, Georgia. I'm new to your radio show. I'm 20 years old. My brother recommended it to me. Okay, so right there, we love that, right? That someone else recommended the show, so that's great. I'm looking to build my portfolio, which is currently non-existent. All right, so no mistakes yet. No experience. However, I've restructured my mindset and desire through taking a year off of school. In that time, I've discovered that real estate is the path to financial independence. The end goal for me is to build a development and investment empire. I'm working on obtaining a degree in commercial residential project management. Also, I'm taking classes on business management. My question is, where to go from here? Should I work on getting a real estate license? Or should I work on being more resourceful and gaining connections? Or should I do both? If you could give me some tips. All right. Well, Kaylen, first of all, congratulations on taking a year off from school to really get your mind clear. Imagine if you took the rest of your life off from school. No. So this is great. You've got at least your mind around the fact at 20 years old that real estate is the path to wealth. So that is hats off because it took me until I was 22 to figure that out. And it takes people their whole life before they figure that out, right? So it absolutely is. So good stuff. Now, you're working on a degree, both the things that you're talking about, business management and commercial and residential project management, are things that have the ability to help you long-term in real estate. So I like that you're working on skills that are related to your field. Now, let's talk about next steps. Is the next step getting a real estate license? Well, as we like to say, that depends. I know the Godfather has some thoughts about that.
Yeah, it certainly could be. One of the things about getting a real estate license is it will, if you do this, put you in the game. You will be actively working with real estate regularly. Now, there are a lot of people who sell real estate for a living. That's what they do. Most agents don't invest in it. So if your idea is to be an active investor, this is a great place for you to start. Just realize this. When you get a license, you don't know everything you need to know to do the business. This is a license to learn the business. So you've got to figure out where you're going to work. You've got to pick a broker who is going to be willing to guide you in your new pursuit.
Yeah, and I think part of it is just beginning with end in mind, as Stephen Covey would say, if your goal is to build a development and investment empire, then getting a license has to support that. And to Bob's point, what most licensees do is sell houses to people who live in them. Not all licensees do that. There's licensees who do leases and retail and office and all kinds of other real estate, land, and you name it. So getting the license could be a good step in your education. I taught at the college level for 4 years in real estate, and I'll tell you what, a lot of the students who came through my classes had no desire in working as real estate agents. They were studying real estate and taking the classes necessary for a real estate license just to get educated.
You know, I think, Kalen, the thing that you had mentioned about getting license or focusing on building your contacts and resources, those aren't mutually exclusive. In fact, you can build your contacts and your resources anywhere you go. We call it build your brand and build your network. And certainly a great way to build your brand is to become a real estate professional. And then you need to pick who do you want to network with, to Robert's point. So if your long-term vision is to be in commercial real estate or do real estate development, then you probably want to go into some aspect of the real estate business where you're going to be interacting with those people the most, where you get a chance to build those relationships, to build up your reputation, to make those contacts. I'm guessing since you said you're really starting with nothing, the short path to getting your empire built is going to be to raise money from other people. So you're going to want to be interfacing with people who have the means to invest in your project. You know, if you look around in your life, there are going to be people who work hard, live below their means, save money, and they're looking for a place to put that money that they've accumulated to work. In your particular case, you're bringing in your hustle, your willingness to work, and when you build your brand and your network to the point, and your knowledge, to the point where people look at you and go, hey, this could be a guy or gal I could give my money to or invest my money with, and they can get me a return on investment. Now you're in a position to get going, and once you get going, you'll find that it compounds pretty fast. And the fact that you're a young person and you're able to get this thing going early in life means that you can probably get where you want to go by the time you're in your mid-30s.
So between the two, I would say between being resourceful and gaining connections or getting my license, I would go with the resourceful and gaining connections. But again, they're not mutually exclusive. I would just be careful of the world of real estate education towards licensing isn't always filled with the folks you want to get around. So I'm a big fan of getting around the people that you want to be learning from. You're a young, energetic person. Use that to your advantage. I think even more important than real estate classes is taking a top producing person to lunch. I would look for the 3 to 5 people that you emulate in whatever part of the business and geography that you're interested in and say, hey, I'm brand new in real estate. Could I buy you lunch? And then when they say yes, because busy people need to eat, you say, hey, if you were me and starting over, what would you do? And just shut up and take notes. So, excellent question. Our next question is somewhat related. This comes from Ken in Sacramento, California, about getting started. And he says, I've been listening to your show for about a year now and absolutely love it. I'm also making my way through your recommended reading list. Thanks for providing that. My question has to do with getting started. Specifically, how much would you recommend saving before getting started investing? I'm only able to put a small amount of money away each month and have been waiting to get started owning my first investment property until I have enough to put 20% down plus closing costs, which he estimates here to be between $15,000 and $20,000. I don't want my money to sit on the sidelines too long, but also don't expect that I can start with little or nothing. All right, Ken, great question. And there was certainly a time when no money down and 0% worked. And today is not necessarily that time. There are ways to get started with just a little bit of money. But since you are on the track to saving money, let's address that.
I think there's a couple of things here that are really strong. First of all, you're producing an income and you're living below your means, which means you're producing excess and saving. That's great. That puts you in a position of strength, not in a position of need. And obviously, you're now in a place where you're thinking, okay, now how do I get going? The long path would be to continue to do what you're doing and save up the down payment and then buy your first property. And if you want to go solo, that may end up being the way to go. If you want to accelerate that, you figure out how can I make more money? How can I do something to add value? A lot of guys in real estate get involved in wholesaling where they find a good deal they can't do, but they assign it to somebody who can for a fee. And that's a way for you to generate some quick money in real estate while you're out there learning your market, finding deals, and then eventually you'll have enough money to do that on your own. So that's a way to go. The other way to go is, I'm guessing if you're saving money, you're probably paying your bills on time, you may have a credit score. And that credit score is very valuable right now. Banks are looking for qualified people to lend to, not just in real estate, but in anything. And you can go to your bank and you can look to get a personal loan and then pay that back and begin to build your credit up to where you can get an unsecured loan, maybe faster than you could save up, and then you could go with what is effectively 100% financing. And if you have enough income to do that, and the subject property you buy produces some income, all those numbers may pencil at the end of the day. The other way to do it is to take your credit score and go find somebody who already has $15,000 or $20,000, but for whatever reason doesn't have a credit score, doesn't want to use it, and become partners with them. Say, hey, I'll bring my credit score. I'll qualify for the loan because I've got income. I've got savings in the bank. You bring the down payment. We'll do the deal together, and somewhere down the road, and you have to decide what that looks like, we'll either appraise the property and sell it or refinance it, or I'll buy you out. And then that's another way to get started. So there's lots of ways to get started. But the thing that you're doing that's great is that you're thinking about what you need to do, and you're putting yourself in a position to not be desperate for the money. If you were hemorrhaging red ink right now, you'd be having a completely different mindset. So you're in a great position.
I think there's tremendous power in momentum, and just getting into your first property, which you absolutely can do with $15,000 to $20,000. There's markets where that works all day long. In fact, some markets where it's even less than that. And getting into something, creating some positive cash flow, and getting momentum on your side is huge. That also gives you credibility when you go to approach other folks. It may be that you try to do the first one on your own, and then you try to get partners. The advantage to getting partners is that now there's twice as many people involved, and you start to develop a pattern and a business model that revolves around your having a good credit score. We're assuming you have a good credit score. If you don't, that much more difficult, but not impossible. It's absolutely doable to get into real estate deals with no money and no credit, but you've got to bring somebody in that has one or both.
So Ken, our experience is that people tend to run in packs, and I'm guessing you probably have three or four friends that are like-minded, and maybe each of you have two or three or four or $5,000. And you guys go in together and do the first deal. That way you don't even have to have any one guy who has all the money. So that speaks to Robert's point about getting partners. Another way to do it is if you don't own your own home today, it is possible for you to get like a 3% down owner-occupant loan. And you should go check with a mortgage broker and find out what you would actually qualify for. And you might say, well, yeah, but then I'd have to make the payment. That's true. But if you bought a bigger house and you could rent out rooms to your friends, now you're the homeowner, you're in the property, you have a chance for equity to happen while the cash flow is being handled by your roommates. And having roommates, especially if you happen to be in California where landlord-tenant law isn't great, it's much easier when you're actually living in the house and sharing rooms with people. And so you have a lot more latitude about being picky about who's actually in the property, and that can be a good thing too.
It's Ask the Guys today. Your questions are answers. More we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Live where you want to live, but invest where the numbers make sense. Even better, invest where you have a solid team to support you. We've been hearing great things about Memphis, Tennessee, and Terry Kerr from Mid-South Homebuyers. Since 2002, Terry and his team have been delivering turnkey rental property solutions ideal for out-of-area real estate investors. So, if you're looking for affordable, trouble-free, turnkey investment property, call Terry. Use our resource hotline at 888-510-6838, extension 118. That's 888-510-6838, extension 118. Or find them in the resources area of our website at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Over the last few years, I've had the privilege of sharing the services of Paradigm Life with you loyal Real Estate Guys Radio listeners through our website, www.beyourbank.com, and also on the annual Investor Summit at Sea. Subsequently, we have seen a variety of financial situations across the socioeconomic spectrum and how everyone, regardless of their situation, would improve their financial lives by following the system we specialize in. As a result of this experience, we have created an online e-learning system so anyone without obligation can learn about the infinite banking concept. This free e-learning program is found on our website, www.beyourbank.com. So check it out today. The website again is www.beyourbank.com.
Hello, Robert Kiyosaki. Listen to the Real Estate Guys. They're wild and crazy, but they really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. You're our guest today. It's Ask the Guys. Hey, if you want to learn how to sell real estate or anything else, we can't think of a better place to be than the Tom Hopkins two-day sales workshop happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, right around the corner. Better hurry and sign up. Get to our website at realestateguysradio.com and click on events. come out and hang out with the Real Estate Guys and Tom Hopkins. We've got a special hospitality suite that you're invited to. So if you're a listener, come hang out with the Real Estate Guys.
Yeah, come have a drink with us. You hear us talk all the time about beer, so come back and throw a cold one back with us.
There you go. It's Ask the Guys. Today, if you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, all you do is go to our website at realestateguysradio.com and click on Ask the Guys. This one comes from L-Y, in Gilbert, Arizona. Hi, guys. You two are great, and I love listening to you every morning.
Perfect.
You know, just a hint. If you want a better likelihood of us answering your question, right? Flattery gets you a long way. Here's my question. I'm starting to think about getting into real estate investing and want to assemble a team to get this done. Who are all the people in the team I would need to do this? All right. Well, you always hear us talk about investing being a team sport and how important it is to assemble your team. But it's been a while since we've talked about who's on your team. So the way we like to look at it is there's kind of your first team, the folks that you're going to need almost every time you do a transaction. And then there's your secondary team or more occasional. So your first team is folks like a real estate agent or broker who can help you find property, a loan agent, a mortgage broker, someone that can help you finance the property. Then you're probably going to need your tax person involved. Real estate has a lot of great tax advantages. To make sure you get the most out of those, you want to talk to a tax professional. And we're going to talk before we're done here about how you find those people. But put that as a person needs to be on your team. Probably a real estate lawyer. And I would say on your A team, your first team is going to be your property manager.
So there's people that you're going to have on your team that are near you. Your tax person's probably going to be near you. Your estate planning person's probably going to be near you. But there's other people that are going to need to be in the geography wherever the property is. And if you do what Robert says, which is live where you want to live and invest where the numbers make sense, you may have multiple team members who do the same thing in different parts of the world. So, for example, Robert mentioned real estate attorney. The reason that's important is because every jurisdiction has its own unique real estate law, especially when it comes to landlord-tenant law. Obviously, the real estate agent who's going to be representing you in that area, the people doing the title, and a lot of times the insurance agents are going to be local. So you're going to have redundant team members if you're in multiple markets. But the property manager is arguably the single most important person because that's the person who's going to be handling your asset on a month in and month out basis. And you're going to give them the responsibility, the important responsibility of making that asset produce steady, predictable profit, cash flow every month. And you're going to want to have that person involved from the process, probably even before you select the property. I think that that's super important. You sit that person down and say, hey, knowing what you know about this particular market, which submarkets, which neighborhoods, which property types are in demand, which ones are renting the fastest, the best. If it were you, what would you want in your portfolio that would give you the opportunity to have a successful property management experience? And then probably you're going to want to go buy that and put it in their portfolio. And a lot of times these guys can help introduce you to some of the other team members you're going to need in that marketplace.
All of your great team members are going to have referrals to other people because people in the business like to work with competent people on the other side of the table. And they'll be able to steer you to folks that can help and probably to people you should stay away from. So you generally start off with your financing person. I have to know how much I can afford before I can make an offer. A lot of times people start with a real estate broker, but I would say first, make sure you have your financial house in order. And plus, the loan programs change all the time, daily. So you want to be on the, you may have talked to a lender 6 months ago. That's out the window. You need to talk to a lender today. Then get a real estate broker. Now let's talk about working with a broker quickly. There's two ways to go. Some people say, well, I'm just going to go call a dozen brokers and give my business to whoever finds me the deal. And the other way is to say, no, I'm going to really shop for a great broker and be loyal to that person. Bob, what would you say?
I would say the latter is absolutely the way to go. If you've got 10 brokers out there and you think they're all working for you, I promise you they're not. They know exactly how you're operating. The guy that you or gal that you give your loyalty to, who understands the business and more importantly, understands you and what you want and need, is definitely the agent you want to pick.
Absolutely. And you can have that agent in every market that you're in, and you need to. Russ talked about your tax person being close to you. That's because you're going to be in a jurisdiction in your country or your state, and there's particular tax law that's going to revolve around that. But it's also a person you're going to be in regular contact with. Doesn't mean you have to live in the same place as your tax professional. We know of several successful tax practices that are multi-state and, in fact, international, but it's a person that's close to you. That's why they're on your first team. Let's talk about kind of the secondary team. Who else do you need on your team? Well, Russ mentioned an estate planning attorney. That's nothing people want to talk about, but you need to. You need to have your estate plan in place early.
Well, so if you can think of your entity and estate plan structure like a bucket, like setting up your chart of accounts in accounting, when you get properties or you have money come in, you have to know where it all is going to go. And if you don't have that, then you're sitting there at the closing table and you're trying to, well, how do you want to take title on this, Mr. Johnson? I don't know. You know, that's not the time not to have the answer. You need to know how you're going to take title. Is it going to be in a standalone LLC? Are you taking it in your own name? Are you putting it in a living trust? Those have estate planning implications. They have tax implications. They have asset protection implications. And you have to kind of know what that structure is if you want to be able to move quickly without having to go back and redo your work at generally some expense.
So get with your estate planning attorney early. Other folks on your secondary team, a 1031 exchange intermediary. When you're acquiring your first property, you don't need that. But as you trade up, you're going to want to have that person. Someone who specializes in retirement plans. It could be your IRA custodian. It could be somebody who is from the legal side. But IRAs and retirement plans are great places to invest and also not great places to invest. So get your tax person involved in that decision. Insurance agent. You're going to need insurance, and that varies from state to state, and you're going to want to have some coverage on your properties as well as general liability coverage. We could do and have done a whole show on that. And then, of course, if you're building or constructing, all the tradespeople, you might need handymen, general contractors, architects, those kind of folks. And, you know, the list goes on. You're going to, depending on where you are, you may use an attorney to do a closing. You may use an escrow company or a title company, and that varies by jurisdiction. In some countries, notarios, notaries are the ones that close real estate transactions, so you need those people. But as you're building your team, you start with who's close to you, the ones you need immediately, and kind of work out. And we're going to give you 5 questions to ask anybody on your team. And probably the most important question, are you an active real estate investor? Do you invest in real estate?
See, the reason this is important is because in any profession, people pay attention to what is closest to home. So if they have lots of customers asking for a particular product or service, they learn that product or service because it's what they make the most money at. Well, if someone's an active investor, you don't get any closer to home than your own finances, right? So they're going to be paying attention to the laws. They're going to be paying attention to the changes. It's going to be top of mind for them, and you're going to get their A game. When you come to them with a problem, they're not going to have to empathize with you, third party. They're going to understand exactly what it is to be you, and they're going to be looking out for your interest in a way that somebody who isn't active themselves is going to be able to do.
You don't want to buy a Ford from someone who drives a Chevy. You don't want to ask the waitress what's good here and have them say, oh, I don't eat the food here. You want someone that walks their talk. Now, we're pretty strong on this because this is a deal killer for us in many, many regards. You get brokers who go, no, 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 it's a conflict of interest if I invest myself. I just broker real estate. BS. That is not true. That's a bunch of malarkey. That's someone who doesn't have the guts or the fortitude or the interest to invest. You want someone who's doing the thing. And I think it's in every regard. I don't want a tax person that doesn't own real estate. I certainly don't want a property manager that doesn't own real estate. Even though the property manager is your insulation between dealing with the people directly, we have some great friends who are property managers. They're brothers. And you know what they do? They manage each other's property so that they maintain the arm's length. And that's brilliant. So number one question, most important question, are you an investor? Number two question, what percentage of your clients are investors? Are you dealing with a lot of investors?
And it goes back to that same concept. How much time do they spend in the subject matter that affects you the most? If, you know, all of their clients are using one particular type of product and then you are over here using something else, they're going to know all about what the majority owns and they're not going to be able to service you. That's true in any profession. And so it's just important for you to understand, is your practice set up? Is your business set up to service people like me? Am I in the sweet spot of the clients? In other words, you're basically saying, look, I want to be a good client for you. I don't want you to have to go outside of your expertise or your wheelhouse to service me. I want to fit in. And this is who I am. This is what I do. How many other people like me do you have?
Right. Your lender wants to be someone who specializes in financing investors, not homeowners who live in the houses. Your real estate broker wants to be someone who knows investment property, not residences. It's like that for every team member. So you want to know how much of that type of business they're doing. It doesn't mean it has to be exclusively that, right? So Bob and I brokered property for a long time, and our primary primary focus was investors, but we listed houses and we sold houses for people, right? So it doesn't mean that 100% of their business has to be that, but enough so they know the game.
Right. So a big part of being professional and staying on top of your game is continuing education and networking. And if you have a very small percentage of your business that is dedicated to a particular aspect of business, you're probably not going to invest the time and money to be at the top of that particular aspect. But if it's a bigger percentage of it, then it's going to be in your best interest to go to the continuing education, to read the newsletters, to stay on top of the state of the art, whatever it is. And again, it just goes back to that notion, you want to be the client that this person is really designed to serve.
The idea here is we're looking for a match. We're looking for a match not only of abilities, but concentration. Let's talk about the property manager for a moment. I get a referral to a property management. He is absolutely great, got a great reputation, but what he handles are large apartment buildings, and I own 10 single-family homes. That's not necessarily a good match. Probably not.
Absolutely. Question number three, what types of properties and or transactions or clients are you experienced in? So you want to find out, and that speaks exactly to what you were just talking about, Bob. Are they used to dealing with the kind of business you're expecting to bring? Number four, who supports you and how? It's important that it's not just the person you hire, but the team around them. And are they who you get? There's a lot of high-profile brokers, CPAs, attorneys who land the business but don't do the business. It's the last time you're ever going to meet that person. So you want to figure out who is it you're actually going to work with and who supports them.
It's kind of a balancing point. You know, if you take the solo operator, you're dealing with the owner, you have a direct relationship, you can be a very, very big client to them and you're going to get their A game. Right until the wife or husband gets sick or the kids get sick or they get sick or they have a family crisis. I mean, it's single point failure. The flip side of that is you find somebody that just dominates the market and they're everywhere because they're busy marketing, and then they turn you over to the team and you don't get a chance to work with them. If they've organized and trained their team properly, that's not terrible, but you just need to know if there's a huge drop off between, you know, the knowledge and the expertise presented from the front of the room or through whatever marketing means you discover this person, and then you go sit down and you find out you're dealing with a junior person with, you know, 2 weeks experience right out of school or whatever, then that's probably too big of a gap. But the idea is that, you know, you want to have stable service. So if somebody gets sick, goes on vacation, they have a degree of critical mass. And the other thing is today, especially with technology, there has to be a degree of critical mass to be able to afford some of the technological and infrastructure investments you have to make to be able to provide top tier service. And sometimes a small guy just can't quite pull that off. So depending on the type of services you're looking for, just understand you want to be in a position where you get somebody who's going to be able to do what you need them to do and to be there for you when you need them, and they have a plan for that if they're not personally available.
Understanding who supports your team members also helps you manage cost. Many times, legal firms will have the high-dollar partners, which sometimes you need, and the junior folks that cost you less and still get a lot of the work done. Same thing in tax practices. It may be that for some of the work you need done, all you really need is a bookkeeper. That person's less expensive than a CPA. So it isn't a negative if they have a team. It's a positive. It's just understanding who you're going to be working with, and how do you get the best yield out of that relationship. And question number five, and these aren't the only five, these are just the top five for us, is do you play well with others?
Yeah, this one's huge because you've probably already figured out we're calling this a team, and you're kind of a team leader. You know, they're all there to help you. You're going to come to somebody with your problem. And if you go see your asset protection guy, the answer to every problem is a new entity. If you go see your tax person, the answer to everything, you know, could be something completely different. If you go talk to your mortgage guy, the answer to every problem is going to be refinancing. There's nothing wrong with that. They see the world through their lenses. And in order for you to see the big picture, sometimes you're going to have to get these people working together. If they're busy sniping and bickering and undercutting each other, all they're going to do is confuse you, and a confused mind can't act. And if you're confused and don't act, you can't build a portfolio, you can't manage a portfolio, you can't make effective, quick decisions. The best way to have a group of people on your team is to make sure that they're willing to talk with each other, collaborate. I mean, I've said this many times. Sometimes, you know, the fastest way and the cheapest way, even though it doesn't feel like it, is to get three or four of these people on the phone together, and you're on the phone for an hour, and you could be spending $2,000 or $3,000 an hour, but you're in and out in an hour and you get the right answer. And if the stakes of getting the right answer is high enough, like you're plotting out a 1031 tax-deferred exchange, and there's tens of thousands of tax dollar liabilities sitting out there on the table, that could be the best $2,000 or $3,000 you ever spent, because you get the right answer and you get it fast.
There's our very long answer to your very short question. Speaking of questions, we come back. It's time for us to ask you a question. It's Real Estate Trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms, and if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits, the beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. And why U.S. real estate continues to drop, Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hello, I'm Herman Cain, and you are listening to the Dynamic Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Tell a friend about the Real Estate Guys. It's your questions, our answers today. Ask the guys. We love to do the show every 8 to 10 weeks. If you've got a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to realestateguysradio.com and click on Ask the Guys. Before we get back to your great questions, it's time to ask you a question. It's Real Estate Trivia, and we're going to give you a prize if you're the first with the right answer. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to give you a question that has to do with real estate. In fact, it has to do with Northern real estate, and as soon as you hear the question, know the answer, you're going to send us your best guess to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Include your name and your mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to send you a copy of the great book, The Social Capitalist by Josh and Lisa Landon, Rich Dad Advisors, and a great, great, great book. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, it was Clues in the News. We had Brian London on the program, and we asked this: according to Forbes, what U.S. city is the most affordable this year, 2014? The answer, the most affordable city in America in 2014 is Buffalo, New York. Number two, by the way, Memphis, Tennessee. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. The northernmost point of Earth, as you all know, is the geographic North Pole in the middle of the Arctic Ocean. So here's what I want to know. What's the northernmost point on land? So the very, very north part of the Earth is in the middle of the ocean. What's the northernmost point of land? What's it called? If you know or can remember or want to take a guess or just want to Google it, do it quickly and send us the answer to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. The first person with the right answer wins a copy of Josh and Lisa Lannon's great book, The Social Capitalist. That's today's real estate trivia question. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. Lots of great questions. We're not going to get them all in today. We never do, but keep them coming, because we love to answer your questions. This one comes from Muhammad in Buena Park, California. He says, hey guys, great show. I was just turned on to your podcast from a friend. All right, so doing the thing, friend. Thanks for that. My question is this. I've been investing in real estate for about 3 years now. I have six single family rentals. Good job. They're all cash flowing quite well. I'm considering pulling out as much cash as I can, since they've all increased in value, so that I can accumulate more doors, but I'm worried about taking on too much leverage. Is this wise at this time? And also, what strategy did you all have when you first started? All right, Muhammad, what a great question. Leverage is a wonderful, wonderful tool and a terrible, terrible sword.
Yes, it's a double-edged sword, that's for sure. But to answer your question, you know, I'm obviously a huge fan of getting the equity out of the property, because the market could take it away from you at any time, and now you have nothing to show for it. You've put in all the time and effort to build it up. The question is, what do you do with it when you get it out? Accumulating more doors can make a lot of sense. I mean, you talk about, what did we do in the early days? We gave a presentation all the time called The Free Duplex Story. In fact, it's a feature chapter in our book, and it's the idea of optimizing the equity you have in your property. The core question about is, how much is too much? Too much is when you don't have enough cash flow, conservative cash flow, to control the amount of leverage you've taken on. That's where you can get into trouble. So when you pull the money back out of the property and reinvest it, you have to invest it someplace where it's going to produce more cash on cash return than what you pulled it out for. That's called arbitrage, positive arbitrage. So for example, if I could borrow out money from property A at 6%, and I could turn around and I could invest in a property B that cash flowed at 10% cash on cash, I'm probably okay. Conversely, you know, if that 10% cash on cash was dependent upon tax breaks and then the tax breaks went away, now I've got a problem. If I bought a property that was at the very top of the market and it was at the very height of the rent and there was no way for the rent to go up, now I could be in trouble if the market softened a little bit. So I think when you're doubling down leverage-wise like that, the next tier of investment needs to be very conservative.
Let me add a long-term point of view, Muhammad, and it's simply this. Over the many years I've been doing this, and it's quite a few years, we have never had lower interest rates than we do today. If there was ever a time to consider this, and the market offers the other stabilities you need, now would be a great time. You're not going to get better long-term 30-year fixed money that I can see than you can right now.
The two most protective ways to invest are with all cash and no leverage, or with as much leverage as you can possibly get. In the first case, if you have no leverage, yeah, you know what, the market value may come down, but you're not hurt and you're going to be able to hang on. All you have to come up with is the money for property taxes and insurance. And that should be pretty simple to do. That's the most conservative. On the other side, though, the reason that having a high amount of leverage is protective is because you pulled out the money. To Russ's point, should the property values go down or should there be a problem with a tenant or the law or changes in tax law or any of that kind of stuff, you have the money in your hand.
And it's almost like a foreclosure poison pill, because if you do get into a cash flow problem and you've got gobs of equity sitting there, it's like a big juicy steak. I mean, the lender's going to come after you, but if you've pulled all the equity out and you're upside down or very close to being upside down, the lender's looking at that going, you know, boy, if there's a way to work this out, we want to work this out, because there's nothing there for us to take except to get our loan paid off, and we're going to have to write that down, and we don't want to do it. So again, unless you're 100% paid off, which is the most conservative strategy, being 100% leveraged and then making sure that the money is invested someplace where you have good, consistent cash flows to debt service everything is probably the next best place to be. And from a return on investment perspective, it's absolutely the best place to be, because you're effectively shorting the dollar. You're bringing dollars from the future into the present to buy an asset that will respond favorably in terms of dollar value to a declining dollar. And I don't think anybody can look at the 100-year trend of the U.S. dollar and think that it's going to do anything over the long haul but continue to fall. It's just been the history, and would expect that to continue to be the history. So borrowing money can make a lot of sense in this environment.
All right, great question, Muhammad. The next question comes from Afra, who is from Freudenstadt, Germany. Dear Robert and Russell, I'm writing to you from the Black Forest area of Germany. I've been listening to the show for almost 2 years, and you are simply awesome. Well, gosh, thanks so much. Because of you guys, I realized I want to be a real estate investor and developer, and now I have a burning fire in my belly. My boys are now 2 years old and 9 months old, and I'm ready to take action part-time because I'm running my own agency as a consultant, and my business is growing brilliantly. So as a beginner with no experience, my plan is to convince my mentor to become my future partner through syndication. My mentor has offered to spend time with me this summer, and I really want to take advantage of that. I want to long-term build luxurious homes for golden agers with a southern touch in the Black Forest to bring warmth to our not very warm but sunny region. It's a little like Colorado with lots of money, lots of resorts, great panorama and wildlife, but there are not enough nice, positive accommodations for the elderly, and this is the problem I want to fix. So let's stop there for a minute. Very, very clear on outcome. Has found out exactly what, you know, puts fire in the belly. That's all great. So good stuff. The question, do you think I'm being unreasonable by thinking as big as I am as a newcomer to real estate? I'm now working on my pitch presentation for my mentor and need your advice and suggestions. I look forward to a short feedback from you. Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, this is an awesome opportunity, and you've identified someone who could be a mentor. Now, whether or not that person is your partner, I would separate those two things. things. This is obviously a developer that is going to be able to teach you some things and has offered to give you time. That's very precious time. So a mentor relationship isn't necessarily a transaction relationship.
I think the very first time you sit down with this mentor and they invite you into this session, the first question is, or the first statement is, thank you so much for investing this time with me. And I have some things I'm anxious to do here, but I would really love to know, what are you bringing me in for? What's a win for you? Why am I here from your perspective? Because if you make it about the other person and you understand their needs, he's doing it for a reason. He's not a fool. It may just be because he wants to give back and that's the benefit to him. It may be that he sees you as a prospective partner and you're all giddy about him, but he may be very intrigued by you. You're a successful person. But you don't know and you don't want to assume. You want to find out. And so the big part of your question is how do I win this person over, whether it's as a partner or as a mentor? And the short answer to that is, understand what the relationship looks like from his perspective and what it is he wants to get out of it. And then be honest. Look at yourself and say, can I deliver that? Can I give this person what they're looking for? If you believe you can, then make every effort to do it. And that will be the starting point. The relationship itself will evolve as you continue to learn more about each other and opportunities come your way. You may have to feel your way a little bit, but the basis of it is just asking him, what is it he wants to get out of it? And then asking yourself if you have a legitimate ability to do that. And if you do, then put all your effort into doing that. And I'm guessing it's going to go very well for you.
Yeah, sometimes we don't imagine that there could be a great opportunity here for apprenticeship. And you can't presume that that will happen, but you need to be very open to that. If you've got somebody who's as skilled as your mentor appears to be, then look at the opportunities because, frankly, there is no shortcut to apprenticeship. We must learn this game somewhere, at somebody's elbow, with somebody who's directing us and giving us help. So be open to that opportunity. Whether it happens or not, you're going to have to serve your apprenticeship to get to where you want to go.
Well, and it's critical to Russ's point that you understand where they're coming from. There's a ton of reasons why a seasoned person will give a new person time. Sometimes there is something in it for them. They're looking for someone to help or to dish work to or to be a bird dog or who knows. On the other hand, sometimes successful people just love to pass the torch. And so you're being given a gift, which is a day of this person's time, and that's huge. So rather than make it all about, in your words, convincing my mentor to become my future partner, I would just say don't make it about that. Make it about figuring out why this person has decided to invest a day with you and how you can glean the most from that. It may be that exactly what's going to happen is what you think, but I wouldn't start with that as my primary outcome.
In sales, we just call that a needs analysis. You're doing the interview to find out what the person needs, wants, desires, and then get an idea what they're willing to offer in exchange to get it. So that's all exciting. The other part of your question was, do you think I'm being unreasonable by thinking big as a newcomer in real estate?
That's a resounding no.
Absolutely not.
You're not thinking big enough.
Yeah, Donald Trump says if you're going to think, you might as well think big. And, you know, we couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, go for it. I mean, you sound like you're a sharp business person. You already have identified a niche and a specific market. You've already instinctively known that going to the market and saying, hey, this is what I need isn't the answer. You're saying, I see a problem that I can fix. That same mentality is what you bring into the relationship with this potential mentor slash business partner, because he's going to have a problem you might be able to fix too. And maybe together you guys can identify a problem you can go work on together and turn that into a joint venture business opportunity.
Far more people think too small than think too big. There are dreamers who think so big that they're not even based enough in reality to even get to the next hill. That's too much. But I would always err on the side of thinking bigger. You can do more than you think you can. You have more capability than you think you do. And your future is limitless. The only limits you have are those you place on yourself. So thinking big is huge. Here's our next question. This comes from Michael. He says, hey, love your show. I also listen to Steve Davis at Lifestyles Unlimited and follow their business model. Good folks at Lifestyles Unlimited. They do some radio. They do a bunch of great educational events in the Texas area especially. What do you think of this article? And the article that Michael's included here basically is, he says, do you agree that saving your way to retirement is why most Americans get old and do not have anything to show for their years of work, which is the gist of the article. What do you feel needs to change to encourage people to invest and not end up broke or with very little? Thanks. Well, Michael, great question. Very insightful. And absolutely, yes, it is next to impossible to save your way to retirement. Now, we may not be as brutally honest as Robert Kiyosaki, who says savers are losers, but saving is a slow, terrible way to attempt to get wealthy.
Well, I mean, even worse than that, you are paddling upstream. The entire system is configured right now to punish savers. You just are not rewarded to save in any way, shape, or form. When you earn income, you're taxed on it. And so you're not incentivized to earn as much. And then when you take what's left over and you try to put it in a bank, there's no return. There's no interest being paid for the risk that you're taking or the loss of the use of the money. The system is designed to force you into the stock market, to force you into some type of investing. Really, based on Keynesian philosophy, it's designed to force you to spend. It's designed to make you spend today because the price of things that you would want to buy are going to go up tomorrow, which is really why savers are losers. Inflation, the loss of the purchasing power of the dollar, is what punishes savers. The quicker you can take the savings and get it invested in something that's going to be the beneficiary of inflation, the quicker you're going to be in a position to win. That's why we're huge fans of real estate. We're huge fans of leverage, where you can pull dollars in from the future and buy assets today, which is the antithesis of savings. And it goes against the American credo, you know, work hard, save money. But you have to understand, our system got corrupted about 100 years ago, and it's just not, it's not going to reward you for being a saver.
Well, it's not the mentality. The mentality of living on less than you make and having some left over, which you might call savings, is great. It's the foundation of production. It's the only reason there's ever any wealth.
Right.
The problem is when you put that into the mattress or the piggy bank or the 0.015% return in a CD, that's the problem. Now you've taken that and those cash assets dwindle in value because of what Russ is talking about. Instead, it's a mentality. It's not that I'm saving, it's that I'm investing. Big difference between saving and investing. Taking those extra dollars and turning them into something productive is huge. So what do we feel needs to change? I think it's just the awakening of people that, and we're seeing it already. We talked about it actually on last week's show when we were talking about the millennials. The millennials are thinking differently because they watched their parents and it didn't work out so well for them. The generation before that, it worked out pretty well for their parents, right? So they're starting to think differently. You need to think differently. Instead of thinking about saving money, you need to think about chapter one in Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The rich don't work for money. Instead, the money works for them.
Yeah, the big question is not what can I do to make money or what can I do to save money? It's what can I build that will pay me to own it? And that's really it. Now, obviously, real estate answers that question so masterfully because you can buy a property and get paid to own it. You can actually finance a property and have someone else pay off the loan for you. It doesn't get any better than that.
It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. We've got a lot more we can get to today, but we'll have at least one more when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys Radio Network. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to corporatedirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for corporatedirect.com.
Are you still sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out when and where you're going to buy those investment properties? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Atlanta, Georgia is still on sale, but you better act fast because the deals are almost gone. Hey, this is Ken Corsini with Georgia Residential Partners, and I want you to know that there may not be a better investing opportunity than Atlanta right now. Listed as one of the fastest growing markets in the country, both in terms of jobs and population, Forbes predicts 26% appreciation over the next 3 years. At Georgia Residential Partners, we sell turnkey, cash-flowing investment properties. We also sell wholesale properties at insane discounts. We're launching a new home construction product this summer as well, and if you're still nervous about stepping out into another market, I will personally partner with you on a small portfolio of homes, if that's what it takes. Don't wait any longer. Check us out at gainvesting.com or call our office at 770-924-5450. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hi, this is Darren Hardy, publisher of Success Magazine, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. It's Ask the Guys, and it's your questions and our answers, and we'd love to answer your questions. Get them to us at realestateguysradio.com. Click on Ask the Guys. This question comes from Ken in Chandler, Arizona. Hoping you can give me some insight into my situation. Our home is underwater. We owe $415,000 on our mortgage. Our comps right now are around 420 to 430. Obviously, I have to pay real estate commissions and closing costs. I won't even be able to break even. I have great credit. I've had great credit for 9 years, but I'm seriously thinking about walking away from the home in a strategic default. And he goes on here with a lot of specifics that we don't have time for, but I think this is such a great question. There's a lot of folks in this position. They've been paying on a mortgage, which is clearly above the value of the property. This looks like at the end of the day, if he sells at the market and pays his closing costs, he's going to be about 90 grand to the negative. What's your credit score worth?
Yeah, so this is a value hierarchy decision. You have to look at your situation and say, okay, well, I want to protect my balance sheet. I don't want to write a check for $90,000. My credit score, I'll give my credit score away. It will heal itself. I don't really need it. Okay, but your credit score is extremely valuable. You can make a ton of money with your credit score. You can save a ton of money if you use your credit for any reason. Now, you may not have used your credit up to this point, but the fact that now you're willing to give it up means you might be willing to put it at risk to go earn some money with it. You might be able to earn $90,000 to pay the property off. That would be an option. Another thing, in the news just recently, one of the trends that's happening out there is underwater homeowners are becoming reluctant landlords because they found out I can't sell the house, so I could rent the house. There are lots of people out there, and this sounds like a nice house at this price range in Chandler, Arizona. There's probably a lot of people out there that have maybe strategically defaulted themselves. And so they have good income, they have good balance sheets, but they have lousy credit, and they'd like to buy your house. You can wrap that mortgage and give them the ability to piggyback onto your mortgage, enjoy your house, make the payment, and enjoy whatever upside appreciation. They would be willing to pay more than market price to do it.
Well, he goes on to say he's actually already moved into an apartment, so the house is vacant. So this could be a great way to get out of this issue, even if you just cut part of the negative by doing it. And with an option consideration, because someone is maybe a lease option buyer, that could be a great alternative.
And don't forget the tax breaks if he turns it into a rental.
Absolutely. I would say one other thing. If you decide the strategic default makes the most sense, which means walking away from the mortgage, taking the hit and all that, there are some things you probably ought to get done first. If you were going to buy another house, buy it first, right? If you need a car, anything you're going to need your credit for. He says, I really haven't used my great credit in 9 years. Okay. Well, there may be something you'd like to use credit for. Get that figured out before you take the
hit. He says he's got credit cards right now. And Bob brought up a great point off mic, which was that those credit cards could get shut off as soon as they pull your credit report.
No. Those credit cards will get shut off.
Yeah, so don't assume that credit that you have today will continue to be available to you. And I can tell you, life is not easy when you don't have a credit card.
Absolutely. Even debit cards don't take the place everywhere. Try to rent a car without a credit card. It's just difficult. So I'll tell you what, I've talked to a lot of people individually that have asked this same question, and the answer totally comes down to them and what they're after. I think that it's a high price to pay for a credit score that you may or may not ever use to continue to just dump money into something that doesn't make any business sense. And so I'm a fan sometimes of strategic default, but I'm also a fan of the idea that you can use your credit score and your ability and you have cash. You can use that in a proactive way to more than overcompensate for any loss you might have.
Well, we talked about the possibility of renting out that house. Now, right now it's sitting there vacant. So frankly, you have very little to lose to try to do that because you can put that together. If you can't rent it in a couple of months, you can't rent it. And that will then give you a guideline for where you need to go next.
All right, good stuff. Thanks for all your questions today. Ask the Guys is always fun for us. We hope it's fun for you. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we have some awesome guests. Very excited about our upcoming shows. So stay tuned to the Real Estate Guys. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys radio show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton.
Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.